You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 175. Welcome to those of you joining on the live stream. For those of you guys on the podcast, happy Thursday. We got part two of the show we did last week, focusing on pitching this week, trying to find some value in pitcher changes. Going to be looking at some approach stuff, pitch use, different things in terms of movement and velo. It's always easier to do with pitching because there's so much to look at in any given start. And this is the time of year where finding value on some of these guys can bring an entire season of benefits to the squad. So I know, Steve, I need it. While I am actually performing well in the industry leagues, I am down astronomically in my home league, dead last, looking for any will to live. It feels like anything that can go wrong is going wrong. This is really a nightmare for me. That's not what this show is about, but I feel like you and I are usually cruising in pretty good shape in our leagues that matter most, our home leagues. And I had to commiserate because I didn't tell you offline that I'm at the end of the road here in terms of having spirit in my home league chat, all of that good stuff. So we're not going to focus on that too much. But anyway, this show is great because you can find some of these pitchers out on the wire. I did add one of these guys. We'll get to it in a minute. But roster wise, it's everything from guys 80, 90% owned down to 1% or 5%. So it's going to be a great show. Steve, hopefully you're in better spirits than I am over there. But how's it going, man?
Yeah. Sorry to hear that. That's always tough. I know the first few weeks, especially in a head-to-head, if you're have only one or two category wins, it seems impossible. But I mean, there's weeks like that spread out throughout the whole year is kind of what I've told some other friends that have been off the slow starts and things like that. So
yeah, it's a true test.
Early. It's too early to look at anything as far as standings. You know, we're what, not even 10% into the season, just about that. We got a long way to go. So I would not be too hard on yourself just yet.
You're a great friend, Steve. You're a great friend.
Yeah. And that's what I'm here for. Yeah. But this is exciting because there's a lot of things that I think are more actionable. We always have to caveat or mention things with a grain of salt when we talk to hitters. Just because we're only 10, 15 games in the season, and we don't want to take too much from very, very small samples with hitters. But that's not necessarily the case with pitchers, because you could see a lot even from one start as far as repertoire changes, velocity changes, all that stuff is actionable. And I think it's why these pitchers come up every single year and guys are, The Spencer Schwellenbach, after a few starts last year, it's like, okay, all systems go. We know enough after that small amount of data. And with this, there's going to be a lot of actionable info. So we're covering everything that you need to know as far as velocity, shape changes, stuff changes, pitch mix changes. All of this stuff is very, very valuable in a small sample. So excited to get into it. Think we have some really good names that might be buy lows, guys that you think would be streamers that may be more than that now, and even guys that I think at least we have one on here that I think consider a buy high. So I'm excited for it, and think we got a really good list of names that should be out there in a lot of 10 to 12 leagues. 12 team leagues. Mm-hmm. Even guys with higher roster percentages, especially a few that are just coming off starts, like in Yahoo and Fantrax, those numbers spike up and then drop off after a start, right? Because guys stream them. So they may be back on your wire after a good result or even a mediocre result. So excited to get into it, and think we have some good names here that could be long-term fixtures for your teams this year.
Well, as our segue, because we're not a daily show. We don't typically do, you know, today's big news or anything, but I think we got to kick it off with Chris Bassett and what the heck is going on here. All of a sudden, the 36-year-old is looking, whether you're on the back of the baseball card or some of the underlying metrics, like the number one pitcher in the league, which is crazy. And that's sometimes you scratch your head. None of us were, you know, kind of pushing Chris Bassett as a breakout. There's always been things that we've been interested in Bassett, but today he spoiled Spencer Strider's debut by twirling an absolute gem, 10 strikeouts, just 3 hits, no earned runs against the Braves on his way to a win. And that has just been more of the dominant season that he started out with. He's now at 23 1/3 innings, 31 strikeouts, just 5 walks, a 0.77 ERA, and a 107 whip. Looking at Bassett, I mean, I was watching a little bit on my lunch break today because I have Strider in the home league that we're not going to talk about. And Bassett, they were talking about just like how deep his pitch mix is and that he was one of the guys who had to adjust the most to the pitch clock because, you know, he was such a chess player with pitch selection and all that stuff. And there's even fun videos out on Twitter that when the catcher calls for a pitch that he likes, he like, you know, visually gets excited. Like he nods his head and he's like, yeah, yeah, let's do that. So Bassett, he has 8 pitches in the repertoire and he has had a deep, you know, arsenal for a long time. But if you look at year to year changes, it looks like the biggest thing is, and I could be wrong on this, but it's a little bit less on the usage. There are some like tinkering things, but the biggest change is the movement profile of many of his pitches, but especially the split finger, which is up probably of all of his pitches. That's the biggest usage change. It's up to 10% this year, is at 4% last year. But that split finger and his curve, which is like a 76 mile per hour curve. It makes hitters look silly when they guess wrong on it. But those pitches have an enormous amount of break that they did not have last year. And he always had, you know, pretty good, okay movement, but now it looks like he's really tapped into something. He talked about how in the off season, the staff was open to their feedback and how he's grateful that they worked with the pitching staff on changes that they wanted to make as well. So it sounds like, I mean, you don't want to overreact. It's just 4 starts here. So this could very well be a sell high as well, Steve, just because, you know, he's 36 years old. In terms of like velocity, he still is like a 91 mile per hour pitcher, but it's hard to ignore what he's been able to do here with 9 strikeouts against the Mets, 7 against the Orioles, now 10 against the Braves. And it kind of comes on a foundation that I think we all know that Bassett is an innings eater and for the most part, kind of a pitcher's pitcher, like we talked about with all the selection and sequencing and all that. But really interesting. I had heard some stuff about like some arm slot changes in the offseason. So we're left to wonder if this is real or if it's completely a facade or kind of the cop-out is that it's most likely somewhere in the middle. But what do you think about what's happening with Bassett right now? He's a guy that I think we liked like 3 years ago and talked about on WAF, but it's been a while since we've been excited about him and never could have imagined he would be like an ace-level pitcher, which is what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of shine that was worn off of Bassett after last year, considering it was, you know, a little bit less on the volume. He was only 171 innings compared to the 200 and the 181 he threw the year before. The ERA was about a half a run higher than you would have hoped at 416. And the indicators all lined up with that, right? Like the results were worse. The process seemed worse. Everything was down across the board as far as underlying swing strike rate, CSW. The velocity was, you know, nothing special still. So it's not like there's something that you can, you know, bank on or hope would turn around, right? It's a lot easier to write off a one rough season with a guy that throws 95, 96 that you could buy into the stuff, right? Bassett, you sort of bought into the volume, the kitchen sink approach, and the hope that you get by with that. If 1 year goes off wrong, that's how he goes from someone that you target as like a 3 or 4 starter to someone that goes mostly undrafted in like 10 to 12 team leagues. But Bassett's probably rostered in most now. I know that he's exactly a case of a guy that started today that probably had a rostership percentage jump at 78%. I doubt that goes much. That goes down further after how good these first three starts have been. But I think it's a bit interesting because what I think people sort of get lost with is looking at pitch mix changes and Bassett, I think, is a perfect example of this this year, right? Like, there's nothing drastic that stands out. Like, a few percentage points here, like he's down 2% on the sinker, up 1% on the curveball, up 2% on the changeup and split, right? Like, there's just a little tweaks here and there. But when you break it down by handedness, I think that tells a larger story. That's something that Lance Brozdowski, that's a plug that we do every single week, it seems.
For sure.
Subscribe to his Substack. He's absolutely amazing. Breaks down. And that's important because you can really see how approaches are changing on how they handle batters each year, right? Like, Chris Bassett thrown 20 four-seamers to left-handers this year. After all of last year, he only threw 109, right? So he's already essentially a fifth of the way there, sixth of the way there in far less than in just three starts, right? So he's throwing more four-seam to left-handers. That pitch has a 33% put-away percentage and a 20% whiff rate. He's throwing more sweeper to right-hander. He's thrown 23 sweepers to right-handers after throwing 177 last year, so a bit of a percentage jump there, and that pitch has a 53% whiff percentage. So things like that may not jump off or be as obvious when you just look at the overall pitch mix change, but then break it down by hand in this, things that Nick Pollock, Eno Saris, Ron Sprozgowski do all the time in their write-ups, Stuff Plus this year, the metrics that's referenced on span graphs that Eno Saris puts together, now is updated and has handedness. Like, so you have a Stuff Plus, you don't see it, but in the input for Stuff Plus is different handedness, right? So it does a better job of capturing how guys are approaching each handed hitter, because you really do have to have two different approaches, right? It's really the difference between being a starter and reliever, and a good starter at that, when you're able to handle both sides of the plate. So you need to have that approach, and I think that's what Bassett is doing, and he has those 7 pitches that he's been throwing this year, and he's able to do that, which is encouraging, right? He saw the results last year changing some things, and I think that we could buy into the 2022 Chris Bassett of 180 innings, a 3.4 to 3.8 ERA with, hey, maybe a little bit higher of a K rate too, right? The swing strike is all the way up to 13%. He's never had a swing strike rate above 10% in all of his seasons in the big league. So that's pretty encouraging with Bassett. So I like him. I think he should be absolutely rostered in all leagues, and is essentially, I trust him as a middle rotation guy. Again, that could be kind of boring, but super valuable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is like looking at Nick's list on this past week, like tier 7 had Lizardo, Bubich, Dustin May, Gavin Williams, Jeffrey Springs, Grant Holmes. Like, does that feel too lofty for where you're putting Bassett rest of season? Like, would you have him a couple tiers down with like Nick Pivetta, Brandon Pfaadt? Because right now Bassett's 69th on the list, but surely he goes up after kind of showing that he's sustaining this.
I think I like a lot of those guys that you mentioned more. Holmes was encouraging. I like who was a few other guys that you just mentioned in that second tier.
Dustin May, Gavin Williams,
I think Pivetta is going to rise again. He had another really good start. Like Pivetta seemed like, I don't know, I'm always a sucker for Nick Pivetta, right? And he seems to do this every single year. Maybe Nick just knows a little, you know, how it's going to go a little bit more. But yeah, I trust, I think Bassett should be in like the 40s or 50s. Like that's kind of where I feel like.
I agree.
He comfortably settles in those, in that 2021 to 2023 seasons. And that's a good pitcher. Like that's a guy you want on your team. That should be able to eat a bunch of innings and give you some good numbers and decent strikeouts while doing so.
Okay. Well, yeah, there might even be a sell high opportunity with, if anybody's kind of bought into the level that he's a top 30 pitcher, if that's where we both like him. But nonetheless, very, very interesting and exciting for Bassett and the managers who took a gamble on draft day. Getting to a much bigger gamble, Tyler Molly is one. He was an OG WAF guy back on the Reds that we loved all the swing strike rate. It feels like we've been burned by Molly enough to where, you know, talk about the sheen wearing off a little bit. I think the velocity has come down in recent years. And I think he was TJ as well, right, Steve? That was in the middle of all that. Yes. Okay.
Came back last year. He missed like most of 2023 and 2024.
Right. But now, new home with the Rangers, and so far so good. Four starts. He's got 21 strikeouts over 19 and two-thirds inning. Sub one ERA and a sub one whip for Tyler Molly, age 30. So a little bit more in the arm than Bassett, for instance, so long as he could stay healthy. The fastball is getting more whiffs, but again, the velo is also at that like 91, 92 that we're not excited about at all, especially with bad extension. That said, he is locating it up, which we know that high lock on the fastball is a great thing. And Molly has that. I think spending time with it, Steve, it looks like the reintroduction of his cutter, which, you talked about handedness. He's using this against lefties a lot. So I know Nick's talked about this as being the season of the cutter. Mm-hmm. And you need that to, you know, opposite handed hitters will kind of sit and turn on sliders or curveballs, but a cutter is kind of a nice option for them. And he's used that cutter. I think it's up to 10% use now, and that has a 43% whiff rate. So some interesting things here for Molly. I think obviously there's some regression coming, but unlike Bassett, Molly's 40% rostered. So interesting here. Curious your take. I think I'm a little more skeptical on this one, but it's a guy who's tweaking things, and it's a name we were excited about in the past. He's got a pretty good team behind him. What do we think on Molly?
I think so. It's interesting. The cutter, it's not like as hard as I would hope that it would be. The cutter in my mind, and I think how Nick approaches it, is it gives you another hard option, right? Like you're not sitting four seam when you can't just sit four seam and expect like a straight rising fastball. It's just another mix to throw things off. But his cutter's at 85, which is more of like a mix, I guess, versus slider and split, where the slider's at 83, the split is at 84. So maybe it works in that same sense, just as a different option to the slider. He does throw it more to lefties, which is good. That's a good combat versus opposite-handed hitters, which is always nice. I don't know. I'm part of me is interested because the swing strike rate is up to 13.3%, back to like the 2020 when we were interested in him. It was like around 11 when we really liked him in 2021 with the Reds too. Dropped a bit. The velo is back to the pre-Tommy John level, right? It's not anything that's eye-popping, but at least it's back to the 92 that it was in 2023 and 2022 prior to the injury. So that's a bit encouraging. Maybe there is a bit more here. Maybe this is like pre-Bassett start today if he does go out and shove again. you know, it may be sort of the last chance to get him if he's still available in 40% of Yahoo leagues. I don't know. This does seem like a bit of like a location heater. He has a 116 location plus on Fangraphs, so I don't know how sustainable that is if he just like it's just been a few starts where he's just been absolutely dotting his spots and hitting exactly where he wants to go. So I don't know if I'm that in, but I think that might be a mistake and I may miss the boat on it. But yeah, it's encouraging that he's had these good results. And if he is available and you're absolutely like desperate for some upside starting pitching, then I could be in on Mal, even though he may not have been a guy that I was going out and targeting despite the early season success in this first 19 innings here.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for reasons to be encouraged, that fastball that he does locate so well up high also has the best movement profile that it's had since 2021. So he gets above average vertical break and or vertical movement and also horizontal break on that. And that has not been the case for the fastball, where both of those have been true for a few seasons. So yeah, it's a really good foundation fastball in terms of like swing and miss stuff. You know, the typically fastballs, you get excited if it's got like a, you know, 25, certainly 30% whiff rate. And so far this season, it's had a 41% whiff rate. That's on actual swings that are misses. But so it's tough to hit despite him not having extension and despite him not having, you know, a ton of velo on it. So yeah, that's Molly. I think I agree with what you said on Bassett. It seems like a good spot to maybe invest and just see how the next start goes, because otherwise it might be too late for a guy that's 40% rostered. So we'll talk.
You go Bassett over Molly
for sure. I mean I'm excited with Bassett. I was watching the stuff today. I think for Bassett, I'm tempted, like I draw the line at the Bubich Lizardo territory, certainly Shane Baz, but I think I would actually take Bassett over Gavin Williams, over Jeffrey Springs, over Dustin May. I think there's enough there that's, you know, it hasn't been accidental for four straight starts, and you're going to get innings that you might not get from some of those other guys for a variety of reasons, age for Springs, or just, you know, babying the arm a little bit for Dustin May or some of those other guys. So yeah, but I do think that Molly belongs probably a couple tiers behind, maybe in that like after Pavetta, but before like your Merrill Kelly, Nick Martinez. Yeah. So probably more like mid-60s if I had to like throw a dart.
Arrow up on both these guys. I would agree with your rankings on both of them in ordering above all those names. Yeah.
Well, we got some addable guys in the next section, under 10% rostered, but we're going to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, getting over to, like I said, some less rostered guys. Luis L. Ortiz, you know, the latest and greatest from the Cleveland pitching factory. Ortiz was like kind of had a quiet 15 starts last year, where he had a 3.32 ERA and a 1.11 WHIP, but it was the stuff and the swing and miss that kept excitement at bay, at least for me personally, where it was, I think it was around 7 strikeouts per 9. He actually has pretty good velo, unlike the last two that we talked about. Sits around 96, but it kind of climbs up above that. And yeah, it goes slider, cutter beyond that. But so far this season, we've also seen some excitement, mainly after the last couple starts that weren't too great. It looked like more of the same against the Royals, 5 2/3 innings, 10 strikeouts, just 1 earned run. So now that swinging strike rate, at least on pitcher list, was up from 10% in 2024 up to 13.7%, which is league average. I know those stats are computed differently across sites, but 13.7 is league average from the way that pitcherless calculates. And yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty deep arsenal as well, 5 pitches, and we usually trust in Cleveland. So at just 6% rostered, you look at this 10 strikeout outing, the Royals are a pretty good offense. Curious where you're at on Luis L. Ortiz.
Yeah, he's always been a name that's been on my watch list, just because, you know, Saras over at The Athletic and of Rates and Barrels has always had Luis L. Ortiz as a sleeper, even back to his Pirate days.
That's
before,
right.
Okay. I think he was in the Yankees organization. I think he was part of the Clay Holmes trade, the original one, I think. I may be wrong on that. Someone fact check me on that. But has always been someone that I've been interested in, but it's been basically an unmitigated disaster. And I think a lot of that, or I know that a lot of that, is due to his splits. He has struggled with lefties mightily. Last year, he had a 9.5% strikeout minus walk rate. That's horrible.
Uh-huh.
Versus lefties. He had a 5.29 FIP, a 4.79 XFIP. He had a 1.69 homers per nine. He gave up 12 homers in 64 innings to lefties last year. That's absolutely horrible. Now it looks like he may have solved, or at least help solve, some of this lefty issue. The swing strike rate versus lefties this year is up. As far as pitches that he's been throwing more to lefties, he has thrown 20 changeups to lefties this year after throwing 16 to them all of last year. So he's already surpassed that. That total as far as changeups to lefties. And it's not absolutely great. It's just an 18% whiff rate. You would like to see that a little bit more. But hey, if it's another weapon to help him get opposite handed hitters out, just a change of pace against the four seamer that he throws a lot to lefties, like a tunnel off that. He is throwing the cutter a bit more to lefties as well. That has has had okay results. Not great, but it's been a small sample. And honestly, you just need something in the repertoire that could work at all, considering how bad it's been versus opposite-handed hitters over the last few years. And yeah, I trust in your organization, right? Like, this is a guy that got targeted in the offseason. I believe they traded for him, right? This offseason, it wasn't just a signing or anything like that. And I'll try to pull up his transaction log there. But I believe in the Guardians, and guy that has this massive stuff and seems to be tinkering with his pitch mix versus opposite-handed hitters. That's been his downfall. I'm interested. Yeah, he was in the Spencer Horowitz trade.
Yeah,
he was traded for Spencer Horowitz this offseason. So exciting that this is happening. I don't know if I'm saying that he's I don't know if I'm comfortable saying that like, yes, he's going to be rosterable all year, but I want to find out, and definitely would want to stream him in the short term in good matchups, like, and in like deeper NFBC leagues. Yeah. I'm sure he was scooped up a lot after that performance last week, but
his next,
it's worth a flyer.
Yeah. His next start is on Friday. If you guys are listening, still time to add at Pittsburgh. So a little revenge match there.
Absolutely.
And a good place to hit. And Brian Reynolds is on my roster. I can tell you, he won't be doing any damage to Ortiz. So yeah, I think that's an interesting stream there. I know that they've been
the one after that is at or is versus the Yankees. So he does well again, and it'll be two starts in a row that he's been really well, then you kind of got to hold him to find out. But I mean, other than that first start of the year, it's been pretty good. I know the K's weren't there versus the Angels, but the Angels also have been better than we have thought recently. So
yeah. Yeah, and that one was respectable. So, yeah, Luis L. Ortiz, that's a good one. And I was trying to pin down where I remembered. So when you said Pittsburgh, it was like, oh, yeah, I do remember he was on our radar.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, had a kind of a quietly productive but boring 15 starts last year, and then this year it looks like there may be reason to get excited, especially with the handedness you were talking about. I'm going to jump over to, because we had Brian Wu on here, but I don't know that, you know, good luck getting Wu in a trade. I think more than anything, just a quick note, in addition to the fastball velocity being up, the slider usage is up, the slider velo is up. This one seems like, you know, it's happening right now for Wu, like we were hopeful. So hopefully Wu can stay healthy and help everybody make good on that investment, because he was a draft day investment for sure. But everything looks great for Wu. Want to move to another kind of low rostered one, though, Steve. Andre Pallante, you know, for good reason, we don't pay a ton of attention to some of the Cardinals pitching. And I don't know that Pallante is ever, you know, I think the upside for him is more graduating from a Toby to a Holly in Nick's little vernacular there. But I do think that it's watch list worthy. And he starts tomorrow night or Thursday night against the Mets. So you guys may want to just check in and see what happens there, because so far in three starts, Pallante has a 2.20 ERA and a 1.04 whip. And what's interesting to me is he's had this floor of a really good ground ball rate. If you've watched him pitch, he has a really wonky delivery. It looks like he's literally shoving the ball, like kind of a shot put style. But he has decent velocity, similar to Ortiz. Maybe a little bit less, but league average velocity. It's the slider that has my attention, because some of these gifts have looked pretty nasty on the slider, and he's throwing it more this year, and the swing strike rate has ramped up from 41st percentile up to 90th percentile on that slider. So now I think he jacked up the usage from like 16 up to like 24%, and the fact that it is getting swing and misses, he's got 13 strikeouts and 16 in the third, which isn't great, but if he can have the ground ball rate, Busch is a great place to pitch. It's not the worst division to pitch in. And yeah, I think just if he has another really productive one against the Mets, I think we're going to start getting into territory where Pallante is rosterable as kind of a glue guy at the back of the rotation. Like I said, he's not going to be an SP 3 or 4 by the end of the year, but there could be value for a guy that's like a ratio stabilizer that has, you know, not nothing on strikeout upside. So wanted to throw Pallante in because we haven't talked about him much, Steve, and the slider kind of has my attention here because it's what this show is about, right?
This is one that we talk about, you know, throwing your better pitches more. You could just see the slider arrow just going up on his pitch usage chart year over year. Couple that with the fact that his swing strike rate has jumped from 8.3% to 12.2%. Yeah, that's a bit interesting. I wish that would be translating more into the actual strikeout and walk rate. It's just a 19.7% K rate. Sure. And it's still a 10.6% walk rate. Like, you kind of could have lived with the 9.9 and 9.4% from 2022 and 2023 as far as the walk rate goes with Pallante, but you know, overall, like, his strikeout minus walk rate, I think, is actually worse than it was last year, despite the increase in swing strike rate. So, it's exactly the same. It was 9% last year, 9.1% this year. But some things under the hood, like you're saying, with the slider usage change, you know, maybe that means he is sacrificing a bit of command, which is sort of just putting the pieces together and doing some guesswork there. But it's definitely for deep leagues and guys where he's going to be available and you're absolutely desperate, like Eddie Buzz was saying in the chat, where, you know, you're in an 18-team league and need to scoop up any available guys that are there. Maybe Pallante is a guy that's there that's starting to throw a slider more. And, you know, you kind of see these things where guys get used to throwing these pitches more, their walk rate spikes, then they're able to get a better feel for it, and it goes on, it improves as the year goes on. Like, Michael King last year is the perfect example for that for me, right? Like, he had that start where he had 7 Ks but like 8 walks like early on in April, and people were like, this Michael King experience isn't gonna work. Well, it worked, and it still is. It just needed some time for him to get used to his new expanded repertoire. There's things that goes on. Like there might be short term pain for long term gain. Maybe we're seeing that with Pallente. But it's interesting that his swing strike rate is up and he's throwing the slider more. Has a decent velocity. Definitely at least worth the watch list, like you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's Pallante. Yeah. I know he was going farther out of the zone with some of the breaking stuff on like low lock. So I think there's an intention to maybe get some of those chases up. So yeah, going from Pallante, kind of a low stuff guy, to about as high stuff as it gets with Edward Cabrera. This is the ding, 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 the Van Burnett home league ad, because he is starting tomorrow, a day game versus the Diamondbacks. And yeah, so far the one start we saw from Edward Cabrera for the Marlins against the Nats, it was just five strikeouts in 5 2/3 innings, a couple runs against the Nats. But the stuff not only looked excellent, the fastball velocity is up there with the best in the league. The changeup has always been something that everyone is, you know, it's been the pitching ninja pitch for him. But talking of Lance Brozdowski, he highlighted that Cabrera's curveball looks altogether reinvented, and it has double the amount of the vertical break and horizontal break that it had in the past. And he also talked about his approach change to righties, talking about how he threw last year 52% four-seam and changeup to righties last year. And that is all the way down. Those two pitches are all the way down from 52% to 12% this year, where now he's throwing slider and sinker to opposite-handed hitters here.
Same-handed, yeah.
And so, yeah, all these things together, I think with Cabrera, it's still the big question on control, right? Because he's been a very high walks guy, and that's been the case so far. But it's just one start, and I think this is the type of guy, Steve, to where if it all clicks right, Miami's kind of been a pitching factory in their own right, and it feels like for 2-3 seasons we've been waiting for Cabrera to truly like break out. I know Thomas Nestico has hyped up Cabrera as well as like an obvious breakout pick. Just 5% rostered. I'm in. I am holding my nose, especially in that league where I'm at like rock bottom. I need something special. But I think he is the type of guy that could be kind of a difference maker if everything breaks right. I'll be honest, I was surprised it was just 5%. But maybe if he has a big start tomorrow, that will change. What are your thoughts on Cabrera here?
Yeah, I feel like I'm always in on Edward Cabrera and waiting for this to happen. Like, no matter how often he gets hurt or has starts where he walks 6+ guys, I'm still in. The stuff is just that good. And the Marlins also totally revamped their pitching development team this offseason. So it's completely new. Which is great for a guy like Edward Cabrera that has all the stuff in the world, can't necessarily find the zone at times and just does not know where the ball is going. I know Pete Bendix, their GM, came from Tampa. Tampa has had excellent success, and we'll get into a few more guys here later, with guys that have low command, you know, guys like Tyler Glasnow, guys like Ryan Pepio, that they give one target to, and they're able to get the most out of these guys with not only good command, but bad control, right? Like, command is putting the ball where you want it. Control is just being able to not walk guys and, mm-hmm. and find the plate, right? Cabrera struggles with the control part often. So it's exciting when you see tweaks like that, right? And like, if the slider is a pitch that he has great command of, that's great that he's throwing it essentially as his primary pitch to righties, right? It's he's thrown 13 of them to righties. No other pitch he's thrown more than 8 times. You know, it's a small sample, but hey, that slider was his least used pitch last year, right? If that's something that he can command and that he's using as a primary pitch, Two right-handed batters, that percentage you'll see shoot up as he has more starts here. You know, and there was even some signs last year that were pretty good, and he just couldn't really stay healthy at all. It was 96 innings, and it was the best. It was one of his better walk rates in his four seasons at 12%. Right,
good point. Yeah.
Maybe there's some bit of improvement. Right, that was coming off the 15% walk rate in 2023. So. Yeah, talk about a guy with upside. This is Edward Cabrera, and I would absolutely want to see what happens here. Doing it versus Arizona is a little bit maybe too risky for my profile. I just think Arizona is a pretty good offense, but hey, like Cabrera has the stuff to have a 6-strikeout, 11-K game. And if you have weekly waivers, like you're not going to be able to grab him if he does do that versus Arizona, or it'll be hard to do that in a first come first serve league. You know, someone could add him in the middle of the game, right? If that's going on, so you kind of got to find out, right? Maybe even bench him if you can, just to see what goes on here, because there was a lot of interesting stuff that went on in that first start here for Cabrera. So yes, to answer your question that you put on the rundown, I am ready to get hurt again on Edward Cabrera.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go back 4 or 5 years at this point, but throughout the minors, I mean, some of his like K per nine was 13, 14, 15. So, you know, he does have that level of swing and miss stuff. And yeah, I mean, it all comes down to, I think, the control, if not the command. And if he can do that, he'll get deeper into games. All that good stuff. Still probably not going to get the wins with the Marlins that you'd hope for, but I think if you are desperate for strikeouts in some of those deeper leagues, Cabrera is a great option. Moving to Hayden Wesneski, Steve, another new environment guy here, and you know, we thought it might be, or I thought it might be, Arrighetti, where we're kind of gambling on the Astros to just develop pitchers like they do. And Wesneski is the one, just 37% roster, who so far so good. And I believe his next start is, what do we got? Yeah, Saturday at home versus the Padres. So that will be a test. But so far we've seen, you know, 3 starts from him, 21 strikeouts and 18 innings, 4 ERA, a 0.72 whip. But Wesneski's got, we knew he had stuff with the Cubs. We were excited about him. But now that he's kind of got a full shot at, you know, making 25 starts this season, I think you have to assess what all you got here. He's a fastball, sweeper, cutter, sinker is the primary stuff in the repertoire. But the sinker is getting more whiffs this year. He's throwing the cutter more to lefties, and he has a new curveball this year as well. So he's done a handful of things. I know on Nick's write-up, he was kind of talking about the I'm getting ahead of myself. That was the next guy we're going to talk about, where is that new stuff enough? But yeah, I think mainly it's some of the tweaks he's making for left-handed hitters and a possibility for him to take a step forward with good extension that he has. So curious your thoughts on Wesneski here. I don't have any shares, but I think at 37%, he's a prime example of those 12-team leagues, probably along with like a Tyler Molly, where you might have to look at these two and make a decision. So where are you at with Wesneski?
I feel like this is a guy right up your alley, a guy with like good swing and miss, good extension. Maybe it's missing a bit of the velocity, but it's good enough at 94, right? Like right on average. Crazy. It's still crazy that 94 is an average fastball. Insane.
I know. You're right, though. The extension that plays up, that, you know, you view that as like a 96, 97. Yeah. In actuality.
Like look at how it makes Joe Ryan's 92-mile-an-hour fastball like the best one in the league, right? Yeah, it wasn't a question of the fastball and the sweeper even. Like, those are two elite pitches, but he's another guy like Luis Ortiz that's been the stuffest. Like, you know, these two pitches look great. Like, he has, you know, the out pitch that we'll talk about with the next guy that was important here. in the sweeper, right? A 35% whiff rate percentage pitch. Like, that's a great thing to build off of. It was just a matter of how are you going to handle lefties. Now, he's throwing the sinker more to lefties. He's throwing he's throwing the cutter now more to lefties, mixing in a curveball and a changeup that he did not have at all last year. He really only threw 30 curve changeups last year. He's already thrown 15. Did not throw a curveball at all last year. He's already thrown 13 to lefties. So that's good. The Astros are another organization where I know there's been some questions back and forth with how much of those smart people are still left in the organization, but I think in the pitching end, they're definitely still there. Like, look at what happened with Yusei Kikuchi last year. I think with Hunter Brown, with how bad his start was, with getting the most out of Arrighetti, I think we're seeing it again with Wesneski. And it's encouraging that we're actually seeing those pitch mix changes and approach changes to opposite handed hitters. I think that's sort of like a theme of the show, right? Like all these guys had platoon issues with opposite handed hitters, and they're putting together tools that are exciting to see, right? Like, they're changing the way they're handling weaknesses. You can do that by increasing, you know, your best pitch, adding pitches versus opposite handers, and the results look good. Like, the 12.9% swing strike rate for Wisniewski, the 30.9% walk rate, 4.4% the 30.9% strikeout rate, 4.4% walk rate. That's it for me. Like, that's enough. Like, Wisniewski is a guy that, out of all these guys, I know it may not be the least rostered guy. He's at 37%, but I would want him on my roster probably the most out of the guys that are
available,
like under, you know, 40% or so.
I am Wisniewski over Tyler Mahle. And to the walk rate, he had talked in the spring about tweaking mechanics for more like consistent control and everything, which I know some of that is narrative and it's confirmation bias, but early goings, 4.4% walk rate, and that's been at 7 and 8 in past years. His zone rates are up. Yeah. So if there was kind of a slight mechanic change to help with control, which doesn't seem shocking when you go to a new organization to work on something like that, I think we might start to see the floor raise for Wisniewski, and enough reasons with the handedness and the new pitches to where it's a higher floor and a higher ceiling, which is everything you want, plus the extension, all good things. So yeah, 27-year-old who's been kind of destined for the rotation, but had just gotten peppered in some starts with the Cubs. He was always fighting with somebody, even Justin Steele a couple of years back. So now that he's got a full run, I'm actually pretty excited here. I think looking at on the last list, Nick had Wisniewski at 64, but I think, again, I don't have an issue with him above a Bowden Francis, a Brandon Pfaadt. I think kind of in that range of like, you know, somewhere between Pivetta, Hicks, Holmes. I draw the line there, though, because I know Holmes had a great start this week. It's a great name for sure. And we got two others, one that's right there in that same section of the list that we'll talk about next. But we're going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, Max Meyer, I feel like he was one that you were following a little bit closer in spring. You kind of had him earmarked, and so far so good. 27 strikeouts over 24 innings, a 2.63 ERA, a 1.13 whip. Had 8 strikeouts today as we record on Wednesday against the Diamondbacks. Granted with 3 runs there, but Max Meyer, talk to me about what you're seeing here and what kind of changes are happening under the hood.
Yeah, I have Max Meyer absolutely everywhere, so I am pretty encouraged by this start. And he was the guy that I was hinting at, like, you know, Sarah's talked about it with, I believe, Lance Brzozowski this week on Rates and Barrels. Like, if you have that one out pitch, that's a great place to start, and that's what Max Meyer had in that slider. It's essentially why he was drafted 3rd overall in 2020. That pitch was just that good. And it was just a matter of filling out the rest of his repertoire around, you know, injuries that came up. And it looks like he's finally doing it. Yeah, the slider is still absolutely amazing at a 44% whiff percentage. Using it as his number one pitch, as he should be. Decrease the usage on his four-seamer a bit. And I think added a sinker, sweeper, that aren't great pitches, but just other options, right? And the fact that he has a slider that he could spin so well, I'm sure the sweeper won't be, will at least be an average pitch. You would hope that there was a little bit higher of a swing strike rate on that and a whiff percentage. But, hey, adding those things to his repertoire where he has that elite pitch, it has me excited. He's throwing that slider at 90 miles an hour. The fastball velocity is up to 95. That's going to help that play up, even though it's not the best pitch in the world, right? The changeup looks pretty good, too. He's throwing that at 89, right? So all of this high stuff, high velocity, it has me excited, and I'm glad that I have him in the places that I do, and I'm really excited for what he could do if he could stay healthy over the full year. You know, a 12% swing strike rate, the strikeout rate at 26%, walk rate at 7%. You know, that's another thing that's like, yep, that checking the boxes, that's good for me. Mm-hmm. And the Diamondbacks are a good offense. I think it was a great result. I think there was two solo homers in there, and I'm encouraged for Meyer and glad I have as much shares of him as I do. And if he is available in that 54% of Yahoo leagues, I would absolutely be looking to add him there.
Yeah, I mean, we spend so much time talking about like the tinkering and the usage changes, but like taking a step back for Meyer as like a big picture outlook of evaluating him. You know, we know such thing as a pitching prospect and how many times have we gotten super excited and gotten burned. But like you said, with the pedigree that he comes in at, I'm so impressed by the fact that like most guys in an off season, you get excited if they increase their velo or if they add one new pitch. He increased his velo across the board, yeah, and added two brand new pitches that he was throwing 2% of the time last year and is using 25% of the time. So it's almost like, you know, this guy, like, what's he sleep like 4 hours a night and then just gets up and like goes to work. I mean, it gets me excited for the long-term prospect for Max Meyer, just that he's even capable in one off season of expanding to that level. And, you know, I would not put the book out on him that the sinker or the sweeper is, you know, forever going to be an average
in
pitch.
Its final form. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and he's already a good ground ball pitcher. So for him to introduce a sinker, I think that could only help that. So yeah, I'm all in. I'm sadly do not have the shares that you do, Steve. But I think Meyer is super exciting for this year and for beyond as well. When you look at a guy who's 26 with not a ton of mileage at the majors on that arm, so yeah, that's
great
Meyer.
Home park,
yeah, exactly.
The new pitching development team there in Miami is exciting. So a lot to like with Max Meyer. I'm pretty excited. Like I could see him being one of like the biggest risers and like a guy that's drafted early next year if he can keep this up.
Yeah. Well, Steve, I'll let you take us home on this next one too, because Joe Boyle is another guy, another name that I feel like is Eno Saris rates and barrels one, but he's been like the I don't know, just this mystery box unicorn for like it seems like 18 months. People have been like, oh, Joe Boyle, like he's the one, but we haven't seen much of him. And when we have seen flashes, it's looked so erratic that you're kind of like, you know, almost like when Andrew Abbott came up and we were like, whoa, it's 15, you know, strikeouts per nine, but will it, you know, sustain and everything. And then we finally got a great start for Boyle with the Rays, 7 Ks, 5 innings. And then he gets sent back down to everyone's surprise. So now he's just 1% rostered. This would be a stash, but get us excited about Joe Boyle here, because whether you got prospect slots or, again, just a watch list or a deeper industry league, Like, how good could this be?
I'm pretty excited about Joe Boyle. There is a repertoire change. He ditched his sweeper and curveball. He's now throwing only that hard gyro slider and added a new splinker, a changeup that goes, you know, changeup sinker thing that goes, that's thrown 93 miles an hour. It has 2 inches of vertical break, 16 inches of arm side movement. The only other splitter with more drop in the league is Yamamoto's. Like, that pitch is absolutely nasty. From watching that start earlier this week, it looked so, so good. Yeah, there was still some shaky command. Nick Pollock did an amazing breakdown of it. He was his pitcher breakdown of the day after he started, and he was right. Like, the target, he just did not, like, it was a fast, calling for a passball down in the way. It was a fastball dotted up and in. Like, yes, it was a great result, but it was absolutely not where he wanted the ball to go. Like, he still has no idea where the ball is going. But as I referenced earlier in the show, the Rays are amazing with this type of pitcher. They fixed Glasnow, right? They gave him the one target and basically said, hey, throw all of your pitches to this target and let the movement and nasty stuff take over, and it'll move to where you want it to move. They did that with Pepiot. I know Pepiot had a bit of a rough start there, but still excited for him and is of this mold, right? Like, low command guys, high stuff. And I think Joe Boyle will be sort of the same thing. The fact that he's opting to the minors, honestly, like, I'm like, great. Like, hopefully people are dropping him because of that. I'll be happy to pick him up and stash him and hope that he is available or is back up soon. And I think he will be. But yeah, the stuff is just so good. That splinker is absolutely incredible. And I'm super, super excited about it. But I think it's just a perfect fit with the Rays, and like, one, like, of course the Rays traded for the guy with like the most electric stuff and high strikeout stuff and absolutely zero grade command. Like, they should also get, you know, Edward Cabrera while they're at it. Like, that's the only right guy that probably right has more walk and command issues than Joe Boyle does. But hey, the Rays have a track record of it working with this type of guy. So I'm not saying he'll be Glasnow, but I could see Pepiot. I could see that sort of result.
Yeah, what's wild with Boyle, 6'8", you immediately assume that he's got the 7-foot extension, but he does not.
No.
Nonetheless, the fastball velo is at 98 miles per hour. So it's like, in, you know, in some way, shape, or form, this is a 6'8" pitcher coming at you with absolute gas. And yeah, I trust the Rays far more than we did the Athletics to get the most out of this. And yeah, I think, you know, the slider is kind of a work in progress, but the fastball there is a great foundation. And then yeah, like, yeah, the splinker,
look at
all
the
that
look
stuff
at this, look at the plot location for his slider. Like, it's up.
It's, yeah, it's, that is wild.
It's crazy.
It's so,
it looks like where a sinker or a 4-4 seam should be. It's just up in the zone.
Right. And it's the Glasnow is the perfect comparison, because yeah, there are some that are the early Glasnow, I should say, because there are some that are just like, look like they're hitting the batter in the shoulder, and other ones that look like they're in the dirt by the catcher's feet. But yeah, effectively wild would be a great goal. And I guess for that rotation, so we got, yeah, Littell, Pepiot, Bradley, Rasmussen, Boz. I mean, Rasmussen hasn't been able to stay healthy all the time, and I don't know that, like, Zach Littell,
yeah, it's
is he gonna block him?
I don't know. I think Littell was good again today, or he was bad at some points. Yeah, he was decent today versus the Red Sox.
Okay.
So
it might be
tough.
A minute.
Yeah, it might be a minute or an injury, unfortunately, but we'll see. I think he's a better, or has more upside at least than Zach Littell. I know Littell had a great run last year too, and even this year hasn't been first good start, the one start he got absolutely destroyed.
Yep.
So we'll see.
Though. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, that signs us out. I mean, we had a good list of names here. Bassett, Molly, Luis L. Ortiz, quick shout to Brian Wu, Andre Pallante, a deeper one, Edward Cabrera, complete low floor, high ceiling. Wesneski, make sure he's not available in your leagues. I think that's one of the bigger ones. Same with Max Meyer, but that should be going up after the 8 strikeouts today. And then Boyle rounding out as a stash. And like you said, Steve, for any of our listeners who aren't subscribed to the Lance Brozdowski Substack, like the extra shout out there. He does such an awesome job. He was on the podcast last year with us. One of our favorite guests, not only for the knowledge, but the banter, just an awesome dude. And yeah, this will be fun to see from some of the names we broke down this week, how Nick's list shapes up on Pitcher List as well. So any closing thoughts here, Steve, before we wrap?
What are you making of Bobby Miller's first start this year and his 5 strikeouts for 2 innings, throwing 98 and averaging 2 miles an hour more on his slider, getting some whiffs on the curveball?
Yeah,
in there.
Intrigued for sure. I mean, he's like my Eugenio Suarez of the pitching slot side that I was out at the, you know, top 80 overall pick last year. Yeah. But when he was ADP, you know, God knows what it was this year, like 600. Yeah, I've got what league is that I've got him in? I've got him in my best ball double up. So that'll optimize that one right in. But yeah, I like it. I like it, Steve. And I also like that Freddie Freeman had a homer there. So I didn't go like 3 for 40 with no homers tonight. So I like that. Yeah, like I said, now that we're just on bonus time here, I did that.
Got a question from Eddie in the chat.
Oh, yeah. What do we got?
Tackle that one, yeah.
Yeah, should I hold on to Kumar Rocker? Yes, I'm in a very deep league, and Kumar has been much hyped over the years as a prospect, but the K's are not there, and he's not looked great. Do I drop him? Hard to know without knowing. Like you said, there's not a lot on the free agent wire, but I personally would be open to moving on from Kumar Rocker just because of the time of year that it is, and some of these are just sprouting up from the ground. For what it's worth, on the Quinn Matthews note, he got an injury too, so he will not be forcing anyone out of the Cards lineup, for what that's worth. But yeah, Steve, what do you think on the Rocker question?
Yeah, I mean, in an 18-team league, which I think Eddie was referencing earlier, like, I don't think you're going to find guys with much more upside than Rocker, right? A guy that was a sleeper for 10 and 12-team leagues, despite a rocky start, no pun intended there. So it would be hard for me, and I'm assuming this is redraft too. I think you referenced that earlier, but I don't think there's many more guys with more upside than Rocker that would be available. That being said, I don't know how much longer Rocker is going to be in the rotation, and I could see you moving on for that. Who did they sign in the offseason? They had, I think he started today, and Patrick Corbin, and he actually pitched pretty well versus the Angels. So I don't know. He may not be long for that rotation, but as long as he's in there, I'd kind of want to just have him on my roster, maybe not start him all the time, just because we saw it in small samples last year. Like, Rocker does have potential to be someone that could have a 10 strikeout game out of nowhere, and you'd be interested again. I know there's been some weird stuff going on with Rocker's pitch exchange. He threw like all sinkers last time, like didn't really throw many sliders even, I think, which was absolutely curious, considering how good that pitch was last year. But you know, it's hard, I know, to keep guys on that you're not necessarily excited about starting or don't even want to start, especially in a league that deep. But yeah, I think Rocker does have the upside, despite the horrible start, to hold on to in a league that deep. In 10 and 12s, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Move on. But
It's just this
team league. Like,
this time of year, though, I mean, it's like there's a David Festa popping up, Bobby Miller tonight. Like,
are those guys available in 18-team leagues? I don't think so.
Dolander. I guess it depends how deep the rosters are. But,
true.
yeah, like Cody Bradford will be back in the summer and probably they'll make way for him in some capacity. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's tough to gauge without knowing how deep each of the teams are, mm-hmm. and everything. But there's upside there for Rocker. I think if it's like a 30 player roster or deeper, then yeah, you got to hold on to him. But if some of those other guys are out there, so yeah, we'll see how Rocker does. I know, Steve, you probably got, I think I was in as well on some of the deeper ones. Let me see. I didn't end up with a single share. Wow.
Yeah. I didn't get much Rocker either. I got some lighter, which I'm happy about, but and that's also another reason why Rocker's probably making one more start, right? Once lighter's back from his blister, he may get the boot there, and yeah, especially with Bradford coming back. Yeah, did I get a Rocker share? Yeah, I got two. He's in my Earth team, which is probably a potential drop, and then an FPC of 50s. So, probably is going to be a drop for me this week in a 15 team league. So, yeah, it's tough, but still think there is some upside.
Mm-hmm. And from the names he dropped in the chat, I wouldn't be too excited to move on from Rocker.
Maybe Logan guys. Henderson, maybe who's getting called up, and I think is here for a start, or should be starting soon. Might as well find out for that. I think that would probably be a move that I could see making. But I still think Rocker has more upside than Logan Henderson.
Yeah, overall. But Brewers do a pretty good job. So, yeah, that good question. And thanks for joining, Eddie. Appreciate the comments throughout, too. That signs us out, though, guys, for episode 175, talking pitching values, looking at pitching changes. So thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back next week, same time, Wednesday night, and the podcast coming out on Thursday. Until then, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks, guys. Later.